Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Today we convene our May edition of the Science Forum. We've gathered a panel of scientific experts to respond to your questions and comments. The number to call here is 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can post your comments at the bottom of today's show page at our website, wamc.org/voxpop. You can comment below our wall post on Facebook, facebook.com/WAMC Radio. You can tweet us at WAMC Vox Pop, or you can email us, voxpop@wamc.org. But we love your calls, 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. And without further ado, let's meet our panel of experts, starting with you.
Oh, Ed Stander, geology, astronomy, environmental science, SUNY Cobl skill, and anything anybody else can't answer.
All right, Ed.
I'm Ivor Gaver. I'm a physicist and a businessman.
What's the business?
Applied biophysics. We deal with medical equipment.
Nice. Okay.
I'm Jim Pickett. I'm an organic chemist at GE Global Research.
And I'm Barbara Brabetz. I'm a biochemist from SUNY Cobl skill.
Nice to have you all here, and believe it or not, we have calls already, so let's go right to them. And Lissa in Kingston. Lissa, you're on.
Hi. When I turn my fan on my desk, it appears that I know it's only going in one direction, but once it starts, it appears to be going in the opposite direction and then goes in the correct direction. And I notice that with car wheels also sometimes, especially in commercials. It appears to be going the wrong direction. What causes that?
Well, let me start it. Do you have fluorescent lights in your place where you're seeing it?
I'm sorry, do I have what lights?
What kind of lights do you have in the room? Are they fluorescent lights?
It's the double light, the real long lights.
Those are the fluorescent
and I have
lights.
Them in, one is the warm light and one is the cool light.
Right. Go ahead, Jim. You go from there.
Okay. Fluorescent lights, in fact, turn off and on 60 times a second and basically provides a strobe scope effect. So what you are seeing is the flash of the light from the fluorescent lamp. You get a little freeze frame of the fan going around, and depending on the speed of the fan blade, it could stand stark still, or it could go a little bit forward or a little bit back. But it all happens because the light is flickering. If you just had natural light or an incandescent light, you wouldn't see that.
And what causes that on a commercial where it appears that the car's wheels are turning the opposite direction?
That's the same thing that causes that, because your television is blinking as well. And I have been thinking of what to do with that. And then in Florida, last time I was there, I saw a car standing still, but the capsules on the wheel went the wrong direction.
That's new. Yeah. Yes, that's new. And that makes the whole thing trickier. What about the new LCD TVs? Do they do the same blink, the same as the old cathode ray tube sets?
They do, because the image is also being continuously
updated.
It's being updated every 1/30th of a second, so you're getting the same thing.
And the HD encoded broadcasts are the same rate?
Right, but on the other hand, the new LED light bulbs don't do it, because they don't blink.
So incandescent bulbs do not blink as well. And explain for us how the incandescent bulbs actually work.
Well, they do blink, except that they stay hot. And as a result, the blink is it occurs within the range of the heat of the bulb. So it's actually going a little bit dimmer, a little bit brighter, a little dimmer, brighter, but it never actually goes black, so you don't get a strobe effect.
Well, what do you think, Lisa?
I think that's wonderful. Thank you. I'm fascinated by it. I've often wondered why it appears that way. But why is there a reason why it makes it appear to go, even I understand it's going blinking very very quickly, but why does it appear to be going backwards?
Because your brain has an image still left in it of the last time it saw it. And then it looks at the new image when the strobe goes on, and then it compares the two. And it has to make sense of that image. So then the brain says, oh, it's moving forward, or, ooh, it's moving backward, depending on speed.
I'm so old that we used to set records, play records that way, and when the thing on the record stood still, it was the right speed.
Oh, yeah. The old turntables had strobes on them.
That's right.
Ah, brilliant. Makes sense.
Very cool. Thank you so much. That's really neat.
Lisa, thanks a lot for the call.
We're getting right once in a while.
You know, Ivor, turntables have made a comeback. Vinyl has made a comeback, and people buy them, and I was pretty happy to get rid of the old vinyl records.
I have a friend who is a music entrepreneur. He uses vacuum tube because he doesn't get the right...
Wow. Yeah.
Well, the great thing is that, you know, you're going backwards in time now. And the new record players, I don't know if you've seen them, but they look like something out of Space Age. And they're $3,000 or $4,000 a piece.
Sure.
Right. Well, it's just a wonderful thing.
Well, maybe we'll all go back to wire recorders soon or Edison cylinders. Let's go to Martin in Sheffield. Martin, you're on.
How do I find a book that teaches fractals?
I beg your pardon?
How do I find a book that teaches fractals?
Oh, fractals? Do you know, talk about Mandelbrot fractals?
Yes.
Yeah, you can look at Mandelbrot. He's the famous guy. He died a few years ago, but he was the one who introduced fractals.
How do I find a book about it?
Well, if you go to Dover Books is kind of like a ready for public consumption with a lot of science in them.
And really
they're
cheap.
Okay.
And they're cheap. They're not big on photos. So you can use the internet for that. But the descriptors that are in the Dover books are really very good. So if you go to their website or if you go to a library and look up Dover Books as the publisher, I'm sure you can find Dover Books and Fractals combined.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
If you have access to internet, you can go to Amazon.com and then you'll find everything.
All right. Well, Martin, thanks very much. We appreciate the call. Okay, 1-800-348-2551 is the telephone number. 1-800-348-2551. All right, fractals. Explain what they are. Whoever wants to go first can. I was reading an article on the possibility of fractal amateur radio antennas, and I have no idea why they would be successful at all. But let's talk about, in general, what fractals are, panel, and then we'll take a break.
Well, the simplest thing is you look at a tree. A tree is really not a fractal because it doesn't go far enough. But when thing branches out more and more, and what do you call this?
Being self-similar. In which
self-similar.
As you kind of look at it in more and more detail, it looks about the same.
Okay.
So another example of that is a coastline. If you imagine all the little coves and nooks and crannies of a coastline, and then you can zoom in, and then you see smaller nooks and crannies. And you can zoom in more. And you
so
can
why
see
was this
smarts.
A scientific revelation?
Well, basically, people used geometrical simple shapes to explain what they saw in nature. And Mandelbrot introduced the fractals, because things are fractals. The clouds are not a sphere. He said the clouds are spheres, and then there's smaller spheres, and so on. So there's a different way of looking at nature.
Right, you can go from the large geometry to the small geometry by mathematics. Effectively, that's the basic idea.
And what technologies have developed or have improved because of fractals?
Antennas.
No, I still don't see how they will work.
I don't understand that either, that antennas is fractal, no.
No, but have there been things that we use every day that have been improved or invented even because people understood that fractals exist?
Well, I don't really think so. I think it was a sort of a satisfaction for people that they understood things better. But I don't think it's a new invention that's come from that, not as far as I know.
Well, engineering has taken some cues from nature. You've got that. If you look at the stress and strain of the way that rocks break or the way that mud dries, those are all fractal. Mm-hmm. And those stress and strain lines have a repeatability of them that get you rid of the energy that's contained within the system. So engineering can use that to be able to create stress points for fracture that are intentional. Mm. That follow fractal patterns.
And you get the same thing in meteorology. They use fractals to determine which direction winds would blow, for example, on a large scale versus a small scale.
Yeah, I think that the usefulness has come more from analyzing data and the analysis part rather than creating something that okay. you use that that's fractal.
All right, let's take a break here. 1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. 1-800-348-2551. Yeah, it's the Science Forum. More of your calls coming up.
Support for WAMC comes from The Cheese Traveler, Albany, New York. Featuring over 100 handcrafted cheeses, grilled cheese sandwiches, and soup, Tilldale Farm organic beef and pork, artisan pantry items, and cured meats, thecheesetraveler.com. Empire Exhibits and Displays, Albany, New York, custom exhibits, interactive displays, and commercial casework for trade shows, events, museums, and corporate interiors, empireexhibits.com. Edward Garbosik, Certified Financial Planner, Havoc and Wealth Strategies, Wilbraham, Massachusetts, providing customized financial retirement strategies for those approaching or in retirement. HavocandWealthStrategies.com. Albany Pro Musica, presenting Pops Goes the Chorus, a cabaret-style concert with show tunes and popular songs. June 6th and 7th at 7:30 p.m. at the Shaker Meeting House, AlbanyProMusica.org. And Plastic and Reconstructive Surgery at Berkshire Health Systems. Plastic, reconstructive, and hand surgery and laser skin treatments by Dr. Rodrigo Santamarina, BerkshireHealthSystems.org/plastics.
Hey, don't forget the lockbox at WAMC.org, WAMC.org. We have this lockbox. It's all right, it's metaphorical, but it's there. There's a picture of a... What was that?
All over the place.
You were looking for it?
I was looking for it. I couldn't find it.
It's right there. There's a picture of a lockbox, and you click on that. You make your pledge. Now, here's the way it works. On June 2nd, our on-air fund drive begins. And what we are trying to do with the lockbox is shorten that on-air fund drive. Already, at this moment, I think about 210, maybe 250. I don't have that number in front of me, but somewhere between 210 and 220. Now, if we hit the $325,000 mark before the beginning of the drive, there is an anonymous donor. We call him Mr. Big. He will put in another $25,000. That means we start the drive on June 2nd with $350,000. That means it's a fast drive. We get back to regular programming. So if you like what you hear, or you like anything you hear, you don't have to like it all. Go to WAMC.org. Make your pledge now into the lockbox. There's some stuff you can get. Not really what it's all about, but we'd love to give it to you anyway. So, WAMC.org. All right, back to the Science Forum. 1-800-348-2551. James in Pittsfield. James, you're up.
Hi. Thank you for taking the call, of course.
Sure.
This winter, I was burning some brush in the backyard, and there was snow on the ground, and I noticed that the snow was melting away from the fire and leaving, like, pointy little structures that were all oriented towards the fire. And I kind of expected that snow would just kind of, like, dissolve and run downhill, but these sort of, like, dagger structures appeared, and they were very, very pretty, actually. But why would the snow melt like that?
Well, my guess, and of course I wasn't there, although it would be nice if you'd invited me. My guess.
I had some good beer.
Yeah.
Might have affected your observations.
Exactly.
No, I took pictures.
You weren't actually looking at snow at that point. You were probably looking at ice crystals.
Right. Okay.
Because of the temperature. And what happens is if you hit it with heat or anything else, the part of the ice crystal that melts first are the grain boundaries. And the grain boundaries melt first. And, of course, they're sort of roundish in the first place. And because the grain boundaries have a little bit more strain energy than anywhere else, they go first with extra heat or with extra energy. And the center of it will be the last place to go because that's the place where effectively the structure is the best as far as the crystal is concerned. So it melts inward on all the grain boundaries. And you wind up being left with points. That would be my guess. And I've seen this happen before, but I've never studied it per se.
Oh, well, thank you very much. That's great.
All right, James, anybody else want to weigh in on this?
Could it also have been the directionality of the meltwater as it's coming off? What do you think, Ed?
Probably not, because if any meltwater had occurred, it would probably take out the crystals pretty quickly.
Okay.
So it's probably just because you have more strain energy around the boundaries because of the mismatch between crystals. And as a result, it melts there first.
So do you want to describe what a grain boundary is, like from a typical snowflake, so that the audience has an idea without visual image?
Well, you start off with a snowflake, and then it recrystallizes. It sinters, effectively. You wind up getting forming ice instead. And ice has got along its edges, of course, there are places where there are effectively hydrogen atoms or oxygen atoms that are left freestanding because they're not connected to anything else. And when you have another crystal next to it, you've got these spaces around these areas called dislocations, and those become places of high strain energy because it's effectively not a complete crystal. And that would therefore be the places where it melts. You get the same sort of thing, for example, when you're ice skating. When you're going across an ice pond, what you're not doing is melting the ice by the friction, but you're actually distorting the surface where the atoms are not attached to anything. So it's a very unusual area around these boundaries, and that's probably why it occurs.
Okay, let's go to Jack in Olive Bridge. Jack, you're on the science forum.
Hey, my wife and I were taking one of these courses that you can get reductions on your auto insurance
sure.
if you pass them.
Yep.
And one of the questions, or one of the points that the instructor made was that if two cars crash head-on at 70 miles an hour each, it's like hitting a stone wall on 140 miles an hour.
Okay.
And that didn't seem right to me. So I said, no, I think it's not. It's like each of them hit a stone wall at 70 miles an hour because they both did the same thing. They came to an instant stop, whether they hit the wall or the other car.
All right, panel. Have at it.
I would say if the car are the same size, that probably would be true. But if a bus hit the small,
yes, of course.
But if
right.
a bus hits a small car, the people in the bus doesn't feel it anything at all. If it's, so you know, it depends upon the weight of the cars.
No, they made the point that these were the similar size cars.
Yes.
Anybody else?
Okay, great.
Well, no,
so
no,
hang on, Jack. Jim Pickett's going to weigh in here.
Yeah, I think it is like hitting it because you have twice the kinetic energy that has to be dissipated. So, although you have the two masses to do it. So
if
I don't
a
know,
car runs into a stone wall, it stops dead in an instant. If it runs into another car of the same size, it does exactly the same thing, right?
But you've got twice the energy to deal with. So you've got to dissipate all that energy.
But it's divided,
divided by
between two cars.
Yeah.
Well, we could run an experiment here and see.
Well, you and Ivor could run into each other at high speed, and we'll see what happens.
I have just I drive a Honda Fit. I've been told that it's unsafe at any speed.
Nice. And that's a message from our legal department, Ivor. We shouldn't be saying that. I appreciate that very much. Ivor's opinions are his own. Let's go to Mike in Southampton. Mike, you're on.
Yeah, I just wanted to interject two comments about your fractal discussion. Probably the easiest way to explain what a fractal looks like to somebody that doesn't understand it is to conjure up the image of what would happen if you took a video camera, pointed it at a television, and fed the image into the television. So it repeats itself over and over and over and over on the television screen if you look at it. And probably the second comment I'd like to make is probably the most important use of fractals in historically, since they become somewhat popular, is to turn on kids in school to mathematics so that we have a whole new generation of interested engineers and mathematicians.
Okay.
That's my comment.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Thanks, Mike. We appreciate the call. 1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. We're joined today by Ed Stander and Ivor Gaver and Jim Pickett and Barbara Brabitz, and I'm your host, Ray Graff. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. Okay, here's one from email. Michael wants to know, what will the best viewing time and direction, compass heading, to be to view the shooting stars this weekend?
That's the Akorids. Almost always, if you're going to look at them, you're going to look at them at about 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, and usually to the west. It's effectively, Aquarius has to be up in the sky.
And this is not, as far as the shooting star schedule, this is not one of the big ones, right?
This is not one of the big ones. It's caused by Halley's Comet, actually. Halley's Comet, as it crosses the orbit of the Earth, leaves a bunch of stuff in the way, and so the Earth goes through that cloud. And when it does, you get it. Now, it depends if you're going through the center of a cloud or you're going through the edge of a cloud. And sometimes we know it and sometimes we don't. For example, a couple of years ago when we had that major meteor shower. It was predicted because it was the same meteor shower, the same location from 1866 when Abraham Lincoln saw it. So we know it was coming by. So right now we'll be going through a section of
wasn't
that cloud.
Wasn't he dead in 1866?
Sure, I don't know. Something like that. Something
1854,
1866.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's great to know. 1-800-348-2551. Ben in Wappingers Falls. Ben, you're up.
Hello. Yes, I'd like to comment on the question we just had about two colliding vehicles.
Okay.
So, from what I understand, the force is related to the time derivative of momentum, right?
It's mass times so acceleration, that, so yes.
Yeah, so that wouldn't that tell you that the momentum, which is mass times velocity, would have to take into account the masses and the velocities of both vehicles of the system, right?
But what if they're not accelerating? What if the velocities are constant?
Well, that's fine. Then you have a constant momentum. But the time rate of change of the momentum at the point of impact is going to depend on the system, not just the individual vehicle.
Correct.
So, therefore, I think we're looking at the driver instructor is correct when he says that two vehicles colliding head-on is the same force that you would experience hitting a stone wall at 140 miles an hour.
Well, I think we were saying that you assume an instantaneous deceleration, which is really impossible. You're also assuming an inflexible body, which is also impossible, because we know that there are ways to dissipate the energies of those two cars.
And the cars show it.
Yeah. Well, and intentionally. I mean, there are places where the cars dissipate the energies with the crash walls, et cetera, to, you know, everything. It isn't about saving the car. It's about saving the people inside the car. But the forces are still significant, in my opinion, significantly more than 70 miles an hour hitting a wall.
It's
not 140. It's less than that.
Okay.
Well, yeah.
All right. Well,
but
good point.
Yeah, I think the point is that you have to take it as a system and it's much more high, it's much higher than it would be just hitting a stone wall at 70.
No, but okay, I haven't thought this whole through yet. But imagine that you have a wall, and the cars hit it from the opposite sides. Okay, so what will happen? The wall doesn't move, right? And the cars do whatever they're going to do, as if they were hitting the brick wall.
Yes.
Thin that wall down. Now you can imagine that going, the thickness of the wall going to zero, and you still have the same effect. So it would be just like hitting a brick wall at 70 miles
but
an hour.
But isn't this getting back to what Barbara said about, you know, crumple zones and dissipating the energy? The wall is dissipating the energy.
The energy goes somewhere.
Right.
The energy goes into the wall in the case when you have a thickness that's not zero.
Right.
And the energy goes into the vehicles otherwise.
Well, they go into each other.
Yes.
But the question is the damage to a car hitting a brick wall or hitting each other the same as that car hitting the brick wall at 140 miles an hour?
Yeah, no, I think it's just, I agree with Jim, I've thought about it.
Yeah.
Is that the hitting the brick wall is the same as two car colliding.
Yeah.
But we're assuming that the brick wall is an immovable object that it's able to dissipate the energy. And these systems are much more dynamic than that. So that's why I think it's less than 140, but more than 70.
We weren't discussing.
Oh, okay. Ben and I were.
Yeah.
Well, Ben, thank you very much for the call. We appreciate that.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Bye now. It's 1-800-348-2551. Another lighthearted edition of the Science Forum. Jerry in Schenectady. Jerry, you're up.
Yes. Hi, folks. I think I heard of several weeks or longer ago about a new meteor shower that's going to take place at the end of this month.
Yeah,
I'm not sure. Is it this weekend or next weekend?
I remember Berman talking about it. I think it's this weekend. I can't remember. But, yes, a new one from a comet that I don't have the details anymore.
I don't have it either.
I can barely remember yesterday's program.
You can look at the internet.
Internet. Ivor says the internet. And, yeah, you're right. There is supposedly one that we have not experienced before. And according to Bob Berman, there are those in the astronomical community, the astronomers, who some say this could be a biggie, and some say, meh, we'll see what happens. But that's the deal with that.
The good news is the moon's pretty small right now, so we're going to be able to see it.
Okay.
Yeah, the The weather's a little iffy, though.
But I think it is this weekend, Jerry, but we'll have to look that up. Maybe Berman will check in.
Okay.
Thanks a lot. Bye now. Let's go to David in Cambridge. David.
Hi there. I was listening to, actually, I'm calling, I'm a punk band drummer. Now I'm an automobile engineer. I can't say one, but right. I are one. But as for the meteor shower, Sandy Wood from the, what's it, the crap. The, I'm having allergies, so nouns are very hard for
okay,
me.
Okay, well, let's just not say any four-letter.
No, I'll keep it clean.
That's great.
Anyways, when she was, when she comes on after Mary Ira, she was talking about the meteor shower, I believe, this weekend. She's from the observatory in
Sandy
Texas.
Wood. Yes, Sandy Wood.
So Google that, and there probably will be information that might solve the problem.
Makes
We're
sense.
Going to have a bit of a. Apparently, the moon's going to cooperate. I don't know about the cloud cover.
Right. Well, we'll see.
Yeah.
The trick is your,
your panelists, your Honda Fit, unsafe at any speed. Ralph Nader, the Corvair. Curiously enough, how did he arrive at that conclusion, bearing in mind that usually Hondas, for the most part, every so often they'll do something stupid, such as the Honda Civics will, all the doors will lock and there aren't any levers, and the computer won't allow you to unlock the doors. Therefore, if you're inside the car or outside the car and you want to go from one side of the car to the other, it's a problem. But for the most part, they're usually rather impeccably engineered.
Okay. David, I think I should stop you there and just say Ivor was making a joke.
Oh, okay. As for the crush zones, just a bit of history.
The Consumer Report said that the car was unsafe when you collided with another car. So that's what classified. So that was not passed.
So it isn't
the Consumer Report.
Okay.
Yeah, this might get back to E equals MC squared, where the size and shape and the magnitude of a Honda Fit as opposed to a Hummer, for example.
Only if you're going at 95% the speed of light, yes.
Yeah. Just so that I don't see my career hit an immovable object here for a moment, could we just not mention the brand names of the cars and just talk about cars in general terms?
Righto. But if people drove sensible cars, such as yourself, things would be a bit more relative, I would suppose.
Absolutely, and nice play on words there with the E equals MC squared. David, thank you for bringing something to the table. Okay, Bill in Rhinebeck. Bill, you're up.
Hi. I think we've kind of discussed the two cars to death at this point.
Well, you got that right.
Yeah. All right. So maybe I'll just. Continue listening to the show.
No, keep going. Keep going, Bill. Go ahead. We've got a break coming up in 2 minutes. You might as well take us to the bridge. Go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to, point out, there was a fallacy in the original caller's, his logical understanding of it, that, if you go from 70 to 0, it's the same as if you hit a brick wall or you hit a car coming at you. The idea of going from 70 to the speed is sort of material. You can hit a brick wall at 1 mile an hour and you'll also go to zero, but the damage to the car is going to be very different. There is a difference in the amount of energy that's being dissipated, and that's what you're going to feel.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay.
Agreed.
Barbara, everybody agrees with you, Bill. Maybe we should have you on the program more often.
Well, I'll leave my contact info with your producer.
Thanks a lot for the call.
You got to stop
right.
now or you're going to hit a bridge.
Appreciate it here. Hey, before we take the break here, we got one from email. This is from Scott in Ballston Spa. If the car hits the... Oh, boy, here we go. If the car hits the wall is stationary. The two cars crashing are both moving, so they both have energy. The stationary wall does not have energy. All right, panel, you have 90 seconds. I wash my hands of this.
I agree with that, but that's not the question.
Okay.
Yeah. It all comes down to the assumption about in running into the wall. Is the wall an immovable object? Is it just stopping and then returning the energy back as an elastic collision?
Yeah.
Or an elastic collision that's all in the crumple of the car?
Yeah.
If you assume that the wall is... an ideal immovable object.
Okay.
Then I think what we say about the two cars hitting head on will be the same as one of the car hitting the wall.
And I would add to that if the wall was a piece of elastic, the car would go right through it and therefore it wouldn't lose any energy. So it has to do with how much. Now, the car, the two cars are somewhere in between that
excuse
point.
Excuse me, if the wall is elastic, the car will bounce back.
Well, if the car is, if the wall is inelastic, the car will bounce back, too, if the car doesn't
But it'll
crumple.
Stay very fresh.
Yes.
I mean, that's the main... All right, listen, let's take a break. We got to move on here.
Yeah,
and,
nobody hit them. Cars at 70, they don't fare well, period. Yeah.
Fair enough.
No tests.
Zach, take it away.
Support for WAMC comes from Stories Nursery, Freehold, New York, featuring an assortment of plants, flowers, and landscaping tools and products. Monday through Sunday, 8 to 5, a gardener's destination, storiesnursery.com. Unusual wedding rings and more in Crawford Square, North Street, downtown Pittsfield, featuring a variety of jewelry specializing in repair, remodeling, and recycling. 413-236-9300. The Henyon Bakery, Amherst, since 1993, offering hearth-baked, whole grain breads, pastries, birthday, wedding, and special occasion cakes, as well as gluten-free offerings. HenyonBakery.com. Paradise City Arts Festival, a three-day festival of art, craft, music, and food. Memorial Day weekend at the Three County Fairgrounds in Northampton, Massachusetts. ParadiseCityArts.com. And The Linda, WAMC's performing arts studio, presenting Diego Garcia, Saturday, May 31st at 8 p.m., thelinda.org.
All right, anybody on the panel know who that is playing the trumpet? Anybody?
Charles Mingus.
No, it's Charles Mingus playing bass. That's Dizzy Gillespie.
Yeah. With Charles Mingus.
No, not in, no. All right, so the scientists don't know Dizzy Gillespie, but that's fine. They know lots of other things. We've talked about cars ad nauseum. And Ed, you know, going back several shows, we talked about the conundrum of the yoga ball.
Yes.
Why don't you explain that and explain the homework you've done?
Well, the question was that why is it that a yoga ball at times is harder than a yoga ball at other times when it's softer?
Right.
And I had a discussion with the person to the left of me at the time who disagreed entirely with me. So I decided to go out and pick up a yoga ball and play with it.
Okay, now what was the problem that the caller had, the question the caller had?
The question was, why does the yoga ball sometimes
squishy
and sometimes stiffer?
Okay, and the person on the line, as I recall, postulated that it could have been the atmospheric pressure or temperature or something.
And
we didn't know you would do homework, but you did.
Oh, of course. Well, the temperature didn't change, so according to her, so it couldn't have been temperature. And barometric pressure, I went from low to high. In fact, I even stuck it in my car and drove up into the mountains to see what would happen if the barometric pressure dropped, and there was no effect on my yoga ball.
No effect that you could detect. What if you went much higher? What if you went to the top of Mount Everest?
That I'm still looking for money for that. I've put in a grant for that. Yes.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, I would mention that if you buy a yoga ball from a particular cheap place, which has the cheapest prices in town for $5.99, it doesn't seem to have any effect whatsoever.
Okay.
Barometric pressure or anything else.
So you never got it squishy.
I couldn't get it squishier. I haven't tried different gases. That's a possibility,
okay.
But so far we haven't done that. Again, more money is needed.
All right, so you're looking for the grant.
I have a lockbox at home.
All right, you know what? All right, no need to be snarky. Let's move to Mariah in Saratoga Springs. Mariah.
Hi. My question is about finding information about meteor showers and things like that. I've always found going online, it tends to be hard to either find the information or the information is really kind of not accurate. Do you guys have a recommendation for where to look?
Yes, spaceweather.com.
Also, Google puts out an app that's specific to the night sky, and they will send you meteor alerts free of charge.
Oh, neat.
Right.
So if you go to if you have an Android device, then you can download that one for free. If it's an Apple device, I don't know. They seem to charge.
Yeah, the spaceweather.com not only gives you information on the meteor showers, but it also tells you whether there's an aurora coming up, so you can be prepared for pretty well anything that happens.
Now, how far in advance can you accurately predict an aurora?
Well, they can't even accurately predict it, but they can suggest that something's going to be hitting us in 2 to 3 days.
Right. The X-rays that are emitted from the sun during a burst, a coronal mass ejection, they take only a matter of minutes to get here. But it takes the matter, the not light, but the matter a while longer because it's got to travel all that
93
million.
That's what interacts with the ionosphere?
Yes, right. It's the matter, the vomit from the sun that causes the northern lights.
Very nice. So sometimes the sun will emit vomit, as you so poetically put, and we won't see anything. And that is because the polarity is wrong?
Or we're not in the right place. Or
it could be the wrong side of the Earth is pointing in our direction.
Right, or even that the magnetic pole is in the wrong place at the time when it hits.
And the sun vomits in 360 different degrees, so we have to be in the right place or the wrong place at the right time to get the spew.
I got to be honest. Thank you. You know, I got to be honest with you. This is one of the weirdest science forums we've done in quite some time. Hey, Mariah, thanks a lot for the call. Let's go to Mona in Slingerlands. Mona.
Oh, hi. I'm just calling about the meteor shower that we're going to have this weekend if the clouds go away.
Okay.
It's supposed to be the 23rd, Friday.
All right. Tomorrow.
Maybe Saturday. At 2 in the morning.
Okay.
That's usual.
And which one is this? Is this a new one, Mona?
This is the one where there's some new comet is flying by, and Earth is going to go through the tail.
So we have really no way to tell just how good this one will be.
Well, according to Bob Berman, who I love and listen to all the time, it's either going to be fantastic or, you know, like you say, how can you really tell?
The one thing I can predict accurately, this is the northeast, and so it'll be cloudy or with drizzle, and you won't see
it. Well, it is already. Here it is, Thursday.
Yeah, well, I hope we get to see it, Mona. Thanks for the information.
You can actually,
you're welcome.
You can, again, you can go on spaceweather.com, and you can hear the meteors hit. So if you can't see it, at least you can hear it.
All right, so what are we actually listening to, the fizz?
A radio frequency effect.
Yeah, if you're an insomniac and you're up, you can boot it up on your computer, and then you hear the tick, 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 tick. Oh, cool. Tick, 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 tick.
And so it's akin to a, what are they called, a Geiger counter? So you're hearing, the more ticks you hear, the more activity?
Each tick is actually a meteor coming in.
Right, but it's not radioactive like a Geiger counter.
Which is a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Tony in Livingston. Tony, you're up.
Hi, I'd like to just mention that Lincoln would have seen Halley's Comet in 1834.
Thank you.
Because
that
if
was
I
the...
remember correctly, the comet comes every 76 years.
Between 74 and 76, yes. And it was, I didn't have the date right.
Okay, so he would have most certainly been alive. And I would like to ask the panel a question. I don't want to beat the car thing to death, but I would like to ask the panel if force equals mass times acceleration is the same as force equals mass times speed.
No, it's not. Acceleration is the change of rate of speed. So you could be going 30 miles an hour constantly, and your acceleration is zero, but your velocity is 30 miles per hour.
Okay, so the second law of motion is acceleration. So speed has nothing to do with it. Well, it has something to do with it, but it won't have everything to do with it.
Correct.
Right. If you're traveling in a car, for example, and it's not changing speed, then you don't feel yourself pushed back into the seat. In fact, you could probably not even tell that the car is moving. So there's no the force doesn't change.
Is it possible for me to get a speeding ticket in a 30 zone if I go from a stop sign to 30 in a second? In other words, I'm accelerating very rapidly, but I'm not exceeding the speed limit.
Right. So you're talking like a radar gun?
Yeah.
What they do is they instantaneously measure your speed, and even though you're accelerating, they can figure out speed from your acceleration.
But I would be an unsafe driver at that point.
Depends what kind of car you're in.
All right.
Okay, thank you very much.
Well, we've confused the listener. Well done. Let's go to Doug in Schuylerville. Doug. Hello, Doug.
Hi, Doug in Schuylerville. How are you?
Good. You're right.
Very good. My question is, it's a very important one. When I boil water in the teapot, long before the water starts to boil, the teapot starts making a noise. What is that noise?
Can you describe it?
It's sort of a hissing sound.
That's the bubbles forming on the bottom of the pot and working their way to the surface, but it's not hot enough to actually cause a rolling boil.
Okay. I don't really witness bubbles yet. Are they bubbles that are too small to see?
They form instantaneously, and they disappear almost instantaneously as well.
Okay.
Doug, are you a drummer?
I am your old friend, Doug the drummer,
right?
All
right. Well, that explains the question. All right.
And I did know it was Dizzy Gillespie. How could they not?
That's it, man. It's a great record. Well, thanks a lot for the call. Anybody else want to finish up on the teapot question?
I still think it was Charlie Mingus.
It was not Charlie Mingus. Doug, thanks a lot, man. Appreciate it very much. Let's go to Jory in Del Mar. You're on.
Hi. I have a question. When I look around my neighborhood on a very calm day, none of the leaves will be moving on the trees, except every once in a while I will see one leaf that is kind of flipping back and forth. And it's right in the middle of the tree. It's not like on the end of the tree where it might be catching a passing wind. In the middle of the tree where there, and none of the other leaves are moving. Do you know what that might be?
Squirrel.
I'm gonna say, is it possible it's a bird who's foraging for an insect and you're just not seeing the bird? Because they do flip over to look on the underside of leaves to find insects.
Yeah, I'm a bird watcher, so no, I don't think so.
I would say it's a case of equilibrium. You've got a leaf that is could be just ready to fall in some cases, or it may just be a little bit too heavy on one side, not on the other side. And so it takes very little wind to actually get it to move.
Is it rippling in the wind, or is it flopping?
It's kind of like, it's like, you know, as if there was a wind going by, you know, kind of flipping back and forth.
Is it an aspen tree by chance?
No, I don't really know. I don't think there are many aspens
It's just a local small wind.
Yeah.
Okay.
With just one leaf? Yeah. Even though it's in the middle of a tree?
It's just because that leaf is ready to go. It's ready to move, that's all.
And also the young leaves, especially this time of year, are very thin. So it does not take much to perturb them. And they are photosynthesizing. And as a product of photosynthesis, you are putting out water. And that water tends to come out of holes on one side of the leaf. Huh. And so you do change the weight of a leaf and the weight balance of a leaf during the course of the day.
Interesting.
Uh-huh. It makes sense. Jory, thanks a lot for the call. Here's one via email. Oh, boy.
Crash.
Here we go. This is from John. You are all missing the point of the caller's confusion. Forget cars. Oh, here we are. We're going back to this. You're all missing the point of the caller's confusion. Forget cars. Forget brick walls. Use a different analogy. Say two billiard balls, each going 5 miles per hour, hit each other directly. Do they behave the same as one billiard ball going 10 miles per hour, hitting another one standing still? That's the question the caller was confused about. It was pretty obvious that he didn't seem to understand the idea of Galilean relativity and was taking the analogy too literally to try and explain that confusion to himself. John. Anybody?
I feel like we're just digging a hole, we're digging a big brick wall hole.
And that's what Vox Pop is all about.
It's your day, Ray. Two billiard balls, if a 10-mile-an-hour billiard ball hits a wall versus 2 5-mile-an-hours hitting each other.
Yeah.
But a car isn't a billiard ball. That's the point. The idea is it's not an inflexible object. So that's why cars create such a confusion, because a billiard ball is an inelastic collision.
All right. You know what? Let's just go to the phones. Chris in Poughkeepsie. Chris, you're on.
Yeah, I had a question about a joule as a measurement of electricity. I looked it up. I can't see, can't find out how it relates to amps or volts or ohms.
Well, it relates to calories. That's one of the definitions of a joule. 4.184 joules is the same as one calorie. And a calorie is the heat required to, it's heat, it's a measure of heat and therefore a measure of energy in a way, is the amount of heat required to take 1 gram of water and change its temperature by 1 degree.
Celsius,
sorry. So, and it's actually from 23 to 24.
The joule is, as she said, the joule is an electrical energy. And so it's not related to volt. If you take voltage and multiply by ampere, you get joules.
Okay.
Okay, what was that equation again?
If you take the voltage and multiply by the current.
So volts times amps.
Equals watts.
That's energy.
Equals watts, yeah.
Well, and then you have to multiply.
Hang on, there's a mic.
Then you have to multiply by time to get to the joule.
Really? Right. Okay, so how does that work? So over the space of a...
It's a second.
Yeah, because...
One second.
Because a watt is a measure of power.
Right.
Power times time gives energy.
Ah, okay.
So that's why we measure the amount of electricity that you use in kilowatt hours. Watts times time.
You got that, Chris?
Yeah, that's clear.
Oh, man. It's a rough crowd. Well, thanks a lot for the call. Chief, hey. 1-800-348-2551. It's been an ugly show. I got to be honest with you. This is... it's time to go home. Marjorie and Saugerties. Marjorie, you're on.
Hello. I, too, am a bird watcher, and I'm calling because I have seen, I was wondering if that leaf that person was seeing could be a leaf that is just blooming, just unfurling, because I have seen the very same phenomenon. And I've also been lucky enough to see my clematis vine in the process of growing. You know, I saw one of the shoots very still, and then it shot up like a quarter of an inch right before my eyes.
Just kind of like the time-lapse photography, right? But it happens. Yeah. This time of year, you can actually watch the leaves come out like right on the tree right today because we just had a rain, we have some sun, it's warm, it's the right time of year. So it's a dynamic system. It's changing all the time.
Right, but could that be what that person saw, a leaf that was...
It all depends on whether he saw it moving over and over and over again or just once.
Uh-huh.
I mentioned the aspen because trembling aspens do this. Their leaves are just enough off balance that a little bit of wind will make them go. So it really depends.
Right. I mean, I've seen that phenomenon in the maple trees around my house where just one leaf seems to be moving. Anyway, that was my thought. Perhaps it was only unfurling.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Could an insect chewing on the leaf do that, too?
Well, anything that disturbs equilibrium could do it.
Yeah.
Right.
All right, Marjorie, thanks very much for the call. Let's see here. Elsa in Forestport, you're on.
Hi. I was just wondering if it's possible to create water in a laboratory by combining two parts hydrogen and one part oxygen.
This is a good question, by the way. Anybody?
Absolutely, yes.
Sure.
Absolutely, yes.
That's, it's what a fuel cell does. I mean, you might have heard about a fuel cell.
No, I haven't.
It's a way to get energy from the reaction of taking hydrogen gas and oxygen gas, reacting them together and forming water.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. It's not something that we have to do because we have so much water, we can just recycle the water we have. But it is a chemical reaction that does happen and happened a lot at the early part of the birth of the planet.
Is energy released or produced when you combine hydrogen and oxygen?
What did I say? Well, space shuttle. Space shuttle runs on taking hydrogen and oxygen, combining them, taking that energy and releasing that energy so you can grab energy from that system. That's
where,
what
the fuel
cell
does. Where
does
the water go on a space shuttle?
That's that big white plume that you see behind the space shuttle.
I'll be darned.
Yeah, so that's water vapor. You're creating a cloud.
Elsa, great question. Thank you.
Thank you.
Actually, when you see this shuttle launch, you're seeing the plume from the boosters. Because
Those are solid boosters?
Solid boosters. Because the water vapor, if you look at a picture of the space shuttle it being launched, you can see the inside of the main engines because the water hasn't condensed yet to make a cloud.
So
now far enough behind, then you'll see the cloud.
So with fuel cells, and we've heard it, well, we only have 15 seconds. Right? Why bother? All right, so we'll pick this up next time because I have many questions about fuel cells. We've heard about them for the last 20-plus years, and now you've asked me, you've started me thinking about them, and we're done. So thanks to Ed Stander, thanks to Ivor Gaver, Jim Pickett, Barbara Brabitz, and all of you for calling today. Thanks to Anonymous Sandy for answering the call so well. Support comes from Kern Compliance Services, LLC, Greenwich, New York, hosting a national symposium on life insurance compliance November 12th through the 14th at the Gideon Putnam Resort, Saratoga Springs, kerncompliance.com.
College Street Motors, Amherst, Massachusetts, specializing in foreign and domestic car and truck repair services and 24-hour towing and recovery service for over 30 years. CollegeStreetMotors.com. Snow Farm Summer, Williamsburg, Massachusetts, the New England Craft Program for high school students, glass blowing, ceramics, digital arts, and much more. 2 or 4 week sessions, small group instruction, snowfarm.org. And the Clearwater Festival, June 21st and 22nd at Croton Point Park in Westchester County. Special musical tributes honoring Pete and Toshi Seeger, featuring Josh Ritter, the Mavericks, Richard Thompson, and Betty Moore. ClearwaterFestival.org. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Thanks to Jessica Blaustein Marshall, our producer. I'm Ray Graff. Have a great day. Tomorrow it's Food Friday.